Picture a 13-year-old girl celebrating her birthday with a Philadelphia-filled baguette instead of cake, going to bed at 7:15 p.m., weighing 13 stone, and scribbling bad points in her diary. That girl was navigating what Simone de Beauvoir meant when she said, "You're not born a woman, you become one." But how exactly does that work when nobody gives you a manual? When suddenly everyone has opinions about your body, your sexuality, your future, but feminism has retreated into academic towers instead of addressing the daily humiliations women actually face? Think of it like the broken windows theory of crime. We need to fix the smaller indignities before they become massive violations. This isn't about grand political statements. It's about the messy, confusing, often hilarious reality of growing up female in a world that hasn't quite figured out what to do with women yet. Adolescence should be an incredible unfolding, neural development exploding like the eastern seaboard at dusk, establishing motorways of reason. But honestly, who has time to focus on potential genius when you're firefighting physical changes? Your body transforms from something that just does jigsaws into a magical department store that will someday vend babies. Menstruation arrived as a complete shock, discovered not from a mother's guidance, but from a Lilith's leaflet found in a hedge. For 3 months, cheap sanitary towels felt like mattresses. Anemia caused fainting, but asking for help seemed impossible after using up that one allotted question about periods. Salvation came from an adult library card and Jilly Cooper's Riders, chosen for its horse cover. That book became filth gold, introducing masturbation as something that doesn't cost anything, doesn't make me fat, and doesn't require leaving the house. Late-night BBC Two films taught that sex could be silly and fun rather than dark and dooming. Fast forward 22 years, and the internet's porn monoculture has created uniformity where variety should exist. The problem isn't pornography itself, but an industry showing sex as something that just happens to women rather than mutual pleasure. Then comes finding what to call your genitals, a formal rite of passage as significant as your first period. Vagina feels too clinical, too associated with being torn and examined. So you brainstorm alternatives, family pet names, the downright bizarre, settling on playful options like minge, foof, or the sarlacc pit. Breasts prove equally problematic. Breasts sounds clinical. Bosom, like Les Dawson. Tits struggles with context. Scarlett Johansson calls hers my girls, which works perfectly, but nobody else can claim it. Germaine Greer urged women to declare, "I am a feminist," preferably standing on a chair. At 15, repeating those words in the mirror felt revolutionary. Dorothy Parker was the first funny woman discovered, an evolutionary step as significant as opposable thumbs. Most women who held their own with men seemed to die young and unhappy, but they were simply stuck in the wrong century. Then came Greer on TV. "She's nice, funny." Her feminism was simple. Everyone should be more like her, scornful of bullshit, fast, free, laughing, unafraid. Here's the quick test. Do you have a vagina? Do you want to be in charge of it? Congratulations, you're a feminist. Which part of liberation for women isn't for you? The right to vote? Equal pay? Jeans? Good underwear possesses endless magic. Stockings allowing spontaneous sex, French knickers with ruffles, silk slipping like oil. But modern underwear has become problematic because knickers have shrunk dramatically. One friend admitted hers were so skimpy, "I'm currently wearing them on my clit, like a little hat." Women need underwear that clings to exteriors, not gets pulled into insides. The word fat has become so loaded that mentioning it prompts scared flurries of dismissal. At 16 and 16 stone, sitting on St. Peter's Cathedral lawn when the coolest boy in Wolverhampton asked, "Did they call you fatty?" the world stopped cold and bright for one flashbulb moment. Why do people overeat? For exactly the same reasons they drink or take drugs. Overeating is the addiction of choice for carers. You can still make packed lunches and stay up with sick children, unlike if you're drinking quarts of scotch. It's a way to self-destruct while remaining functional, which is why it's women's common addiction, quietly eating mums, office door Kit Kats, late-night fridge moments. Working at Melody Maker meant becoming the least important person at a weekly music paper everyone confused with NME. The music industry is tiny, essentially a village congregating in the same 5 or 6 bars every night. When one writer filled the gossip column with barely concealed references to a hookup, when the section editor asked me to sit on his lap to discuss promotion, these moments didn't register immediately as sexism. Often, a woman catches the bus home, washes her face, gets into bed before putting the light back on and shouting, "Hang on, I've just had some sexism at me." The office was filled with good liberal men who tied themselves in knots trying to square their belief that women are equal with the evidence that there just weren't that many great records made by women. Every 6 weeks, they'd despair. "Jesus, we've got to get some women in the paper." What nobody would say aloud was that women simply seemed to have less to say than men. Based on personal experience, 100,000 years of male superiority has origins in the simple fact that men don't get cystitis. We are physically the weaker sex, not as good at hefting stones or killing mammoths. In primitive times, winners were always going to be anyone physically strong enough to punch an antelope down whose libido didn't end with dying in childbirth. Outside Spearmint Rhino at midnight, security ejected us. "We know your game. You're prostitutes." In their world, women exist on a binary, stripper or whore. The year 2000 made strip clubs socially acceptable again, Britpop and Loaded magazine repackaging working-class tropes, Spice Girls attending strip club hen parties. When young women fund university by stripping while male students don't, that's not empowerment. It's a political crisis. Inside these clubs, nobody's having fun. The women hate the men. The men can't possibly have kind feelings toward these women. Every dance is the bastard child of misogyny and commerce. What hamstrung me at 13 was the princess ideal. Despite modern alternative princesses, the tropes remain harmful. Princesses never run in gangs, miss out on friendship, museums with sisters, pub afternoons. Eventually, I realized I'm not muse material either. I'd have to actually do something instead of just be something. Women often see themselves as endless lists of problems to fix, spending fortunes on supposed solutions. The greatest feminist revelation? Simply not giving a shit. In the 21st century, change doesn't require risking imprisonment or death, just honesty. Reject magazines that make you feel inadequate, shame colleagues who frequent strip clubs, ignore wedding pressure, admit when you can't afford luxury items. True women's liberation benefits men too. The patriarchy must be exhausted after 100,000 years. Feminists don't want to replace men, just claim our fair share. We want choice, variety, more women, not just for fairness, but because it makes the world better and more exciting. What I really want isn't to be a woman in some perfect sense, not a princess, goddess, or muse, but simply a productive, honest, courteously treated human, one of the guys, but with really amazing hair.